here? No. You want to go home?
Yeah.
All right, go home. There we go. Okay, good, good. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Bonet. It's very, very, who wanted to go home? I want to see those hands again. It is a pleasure to be here today. I was here, it was 10 years ago today, this very day. I was asked to speak in public to graduate students. And it was so poor, so terrible, that I never thought they would invite me back again. 15% of the students dropped out the next day. And a long petition. This is a joke. Setting it up, okay? We're setting it up. It is actually a great pleasure to be here. I've in my own small way, I've tried to advocate for this. I think it's a marvelous, marvelous thing. My understanding of the world is that almost all of the important human, educational, and social problems and opportunities in our nation and around the world are solved not by people working in their individual vineyards, by having cross-fertilization across various dimensions. I think that's the kind of work we need. I think that for you to have the opportunity to learn and listen from colleagues across departments, it's a fabulous opportunity. If you keep your ears open, you will find some really basic things like at the core level, like what the heck is the problem? And you'll see that you'll be sitting next to an economist that characterizes it as a human capital problem, and then you'll be sitting next to someone in HOD who will see the problem completely differently. So this kind of cross-fertilization, I think, is actually very important. Two of the best places I've seen it recently have been around this achievement gap issue and then around homeless kids. I think are really yeasty examples of where this cross-fertilization plays out. Now, I wanted to kind of start with an icebreaker, and I was going to ask for contributions as the icebreaker, but my wife didn't think that would go over very well. So I actually created my own intelligence test, okay, which you now have on your desk. It is called the Murphy-Zonkenstein Test of Human Intelligence, the Valid and Reliable. You have in your table 7 minutes to answer these questions to the best of your ability. And then we will see how you do.
Should I, like, scan the minutes?
No, 7 total. Let's take a look at these. There's a certain cultural bias in this intelligence test, in case you can't figure it out, all right? All right, what's the story with the first one in the pigs? Anyone?
Rachel,
what do we got here?
A bush hog isn't an animal, it's a piece of farm equipment.
That is correct. A bush hog is not from the pig family, it is actually a piece of farm equipment. Very good, all right? Number two, actually, how many people are not from Tennessee? You all got this wrong. How many people are not from Middle Tennessee? Yeah, you probably didn't do too well in this either. What is the story of helping his friend out by going to the store and picking up something at the convenience center? Anybody?
The convenience center is the bathroom.
Yes, sir.
The bathroom. You want to stake your degree on that?
Sure.
All right. No degree for this man. No, it is not a bathroom. What is the convenience center?
It's like, not a dump, but like a place you take
it off. Is a dump. It is a Tennessee word for dump, all right? Very good, yeah. Yeah, most people down here don't have trash or convenience center as the way that that gets done, right? All right. Number three. What's the problem with number three?
Chiggers are red.
Nobody? What's that?
Chiggers.
Say it again.
Chiggers aren't little black devils.
Chiggers are not little black devils. What does this, that's exactly right, okay? Chiggers are invisible. It's kind of a catch-22, right? What does this person actually have on that? Sea ticks, not just regular ticks, sea ticks, right? All right, number four, the belt buckle.
Is it Confederate Sons?
He was actually taken out of the Civil War memorabilia.
Yes. It's Confederate States of America belt buckle, and $3,000 would be just about right.
I think that he would say he's found the memorabilia from the war, more than the
Congression. More than the Congression, that's right. Very, very well done. You can have this man's degree. You can have two. And then the last one, what's the story of this tractor with 80,000 miles on it?
Hours.
Somebody.
Hours.
Somebody from the gifted side of the room. Anybody over here? You can repeat. This is great. This has a religious tone. Go ahead.
You don't measure miles.
Yes, tractors don't come in miles. They come in hours. Okay? So, let's retest. How many people got all five correct in your table? Ah, you must be from Philadelphia, huh? All right. Well, it is a perfectly reliable and valid test. That's all I can tell you. So you'll have to go from there. All right, let's start on this achievement gap story. And I want to do a couple things. I want to frame it up, just big picture, so you can see what it looks like. Then I want to walk us through some things, and I'll show you what they are when we get past the slides. Now, what I'll do is I just want to run through some slides so you can see what the achievement gap actually looks like. And I should say, on the slides in the show, white, African-American, and Hispanic, everything I talk about will be black, white, or high-income, low-income. There's not enough research, actually, on the Hispanic problem to actually have a lot to say. Okay? And they're different. We'll talk about that in a minute, too. Okay? Now, here's the story. You, being the brightest of the bright, I'm going to ask you a couple questions. And you are going to want to attribute greater meaning to the question that's actually there. So when I say, look at the table, or look at the figure, and give me a general deduction, it isn't a trick question. I'm not looking for something seven layers deep here. Right? Look at the table, look at the figure, and tell me what you see. And I want you to make two deductions, okay? What two deductions can you make when we start playing here? This is the NAEP, National Assessment of Educational Progress exam for I'm not boring you with the details, but age 13. And down the bottom, the numbers at the bottom represent the difference between the African American and white. Right? That the numbers in parentheses, you all with me on that? This is the easy part, right? And then you can see 8th grade math, reading, more reading, different age level. Here we see some math at the high school, 12th grade math, reading. Age 17. That should do the trick. All right. What two deductions can we make looking at these charts?
Well, other than the Y aptitude being significantly higher.
Well, that's sufficient. You get full credit for that. All right? The one deduction is what? Right? There's a pretty tidy gap here, right, between these folks, yes? That's that, you know, you get full credit for that. Now, if you want to add on to that, you can do more. What else?
I was going to say that from 99 to 04, in all categories, it's declined.
Yes, to a certain extent. But it bounces around, basically, right?
I stick with my first answer, then.
You're going to stand just on the first. That is a very wise decision. Just go with the first one because then you get the full credit. What else do we see here?
That the Black and Hispanic performance has increased from 1975 to 2004 in all categories substantially, more than just bouncing around.
You see a substantial growth here.
Mm-hmm.
How many people see substantial growth?
I mean, more than just one to comparative.
There's a big jump, and then it just kind of levels off.
Yeah. I think the major message here, guys, is the gap's done been around for a long time, right? Pretty significant on all these points of view. If you go back and look at them, you see some... Oop, that didn't work, Joe. You see some change, but again, you know, nothing to write home about. These numbers, by and large, tell us that we're not having a lot of real effect in closing the gap, right? So, one, there is a huge gap, yes? And two, over a long period of time, the gaps have not significantly narrowed, right? I mean, they certainly make an argument on anyone that wants to move around. But by and large, the big picture is absence of progress. I think those are the two major points we want to make here on these. Now, you can see when you look at other exams, this is the calculus AP exam that I know all of you took when you were in high school. And you begin to see, here actually you see an increase in the gap. Anyone know why that might be?
Smaller pool?
Where is the courage? Where is the courage?
I would say because there are fewer minority students enrolled in AP courses. And is that an average of performance of those students who are enrolled in taking the AP exam?
Not fewer, more. Right? We have more minority students taking AP courses. So what we have here is an effect where you have for a long time, minority students were not invited into AP courses and didn't take the exam. We have increasing numbers. So we're getting increasing numbers into the program, but we're not getting increasing effects of kids being successful in those programs. It's another example where access does not equate with success. Same story through most of that stuff. The only place actually where there's been significant decline in the gap is on the graduation rate completion. And you can see there, the trend line actually does go down significantly from about 23.6 40 years ago down to just under 5 now. But that's not, you know, in case we get too smug about that, the real issue here is what happens when they go into college. So we're getting kids actually to stay in high school, but we send them to college, you can see that the gap, again, has basically stayed the same for, actually it's actually increasing a little bit, but again, for the same reason as with the AP scores. So why is it important? Obviously it's important to the individual, and it has a pretty significant societal implication as well. If you're on the wrong side of the achievement gap, you have problems. You're likely to be significantly behind in school, much more likely to drop out of school, less likely to enroll in college, and less likely to graduate if you actually do enroll in college. Did to some examples from the research, some numbers to sort of back that up, if you will. Tim, do they actually have the PowerPoint?
Yes.
They do, good. And you didn't even need me, did you? This is where you nod, yes, yes, yes.
No.
Employment, pretty clear path between limited career path and kids on the wrong side of the achievement gap, being in the low-paid positions, much lower wages. What we find here is that the gap is actually shifted from being a measure of achievement to being a measure of inequality in society. It's sort of the big issue, if you will. Now, there's societal impact on these issues, too. This isn't just what happens to the individual students on the wrong side of the gap. The economic competitiveness, standard of living, productivity, all sort of economic indicators are pretty dramatic for the effect of the gap. Here you have some numbers. And anybody in economics around? This is what economists do. Yeah, see, they make up these numbers, right? They go into their closet and come up with these numbers. But I think the numbers actually show that there's some pretty serious consequences to the larger society, larger economic well-being of the country, as well as individuals. I think the real costs that will come in terms of issues of social justice and damages to the political fabric, social welfare of the society in general. I think that's many people who write in this area, study this area, argue that the very fabric that's held the country together in terms of justice and social well-being is being pretty well tattered by what we see here. Now, here's the issue about closing the gap. And that's in really four parts, less if you run out of time, but four to start with. And one are some big picture conclusions, because I want to take you beyond the surface of the gap. I want to take you down a little bit. Then I want to talk a little bit about some factors that need to be emphasized, and then some timing issues, and finally some real cautions here when we deal with the achievement gap, including probably the most salient one, which is the achievement gap itself is the wrong focus for school improvement well-being of low-income and minority kids. So here we go, big pictures. Here's the first one. Schools don't cause achievement gaps. That's sort of mythology. Not sort of mythology, it is mythology. Schools, there's a lot of baggage that can be laid at the door of school people, but closing the achievement gap is clearly unequivocally not one of them. Okay. Here's what we know about the gap. Half the gap that shows up in 12th grade appears at the door when kid walks into kindergarten. Yes? So 50% of the final achievement gap is with the student when they come to kindergarten. Just for those who don't hang out in schools, that's not a school issue. Right? That's an environmental, family, societal kind of issue. Then another 25% of the gap actually shows up during the summer period in the primary years. So roughly between, and these are sort of schematics, so don't hold me to the exact number, but somewhere between kindergarten and about fifth grade, 25% of the gap shows up over the summer months. So you're up to about 75% of the gap. So if you look at the two lines, your median assumption there is that the gap is increasing in schools in the primary grades, but that's not actually true. Schools, primary schools in general, right, do actually a fairly good job of holding what they're given when kids come into school. Right? Almost all that effect that occurs early on is pouncing around over the summer months, which is exactly the same effect that you have from age 0 to 5, right? The same outside of school kind of effect. So that actually is the reality. Now, what this means is for any sensible human being would quickly come to the conclusion that if 75% plus of the problem rests outside of schools, it is unrealistic and foolish to assume that schools are going to solve the achievement gap by themselves. That's simply never going to happen. That's not a wager you would want to make. That doesn't mean there aren't heroic places where it will happen, and schools populated by crazy people and martyrs and saints that will happen, but for the 95% of us in the middle, it's not going to work. So what we know is that we have to intervene outside of schools, and we have to intervene, we have to do what schools can do as well. And I'll give you some real examples about how schools have to play. Now, there is an indictment for schools. It's not that they caused the gap. It's that not been as effective as they probably could have in helping to narrow or close the gap. Yes, that's probably the major indictment. We could have one more. Because we only showed about 40 years of the gap. That gap goes back to Babylonian times, right? This isn't like a new phenomenon. Why haven't we closed the gap? Why haven't we been as successful as maybe we should have been? Nobody cared. It wasn't a front burner issue, right? It was, if a social condition exists for hundreds of years and it doesn't change, then you have to come to the conclusion that people really didn't care that much about it. And I think that's a very fair judgment to make. The second thing is that achievement gap is primarily an ethical and moral issue at its heart. And it's only in the last 15 or 20 years that people have been able to look at it clearly through the prism of morality and ethics and justice. And when you do that, then you obviously raise the level of concern. And then finally, and probably most critically, is closing the gap actually requires a redistribution of existing resources to the have-nots from the haves. You with me? This isn't necessarily everyone floats up on the same boat. You have to actually have to take stuff away from those who have it and be willing to give it to those who don't. That is not a popular stance in this country. So that's, I think, historically, why we haven't had a lot of action. Now, here is actually the very good news. Low income, and again, I say minority students here, remember my earlier category, we're really talking about African-American students, primarily, are school-dependent. More school-dependent than advantaged kids, yes? What that means is when things go well in school for these kids, they are significantly advantaged. When things don't go well, they are significantly disadvantaged. Because when they don't go well, there's no safety system behind them. If you're a third grade, upper middle income, white student, and you have a bad third grade teacher, rest assured that your community, your parents, and your grandparents, and everyone else that you hang around with is going to compensate for that problem to a large extent. If you're a poor African-American urban student and you have a bad third-grade teacher, you got a problem, right? Because the safety net, the dependency on the school is much more significant. So when schools don't do what they're supposed to do, it hurts these kids more. Second issue, they were the big conclusion issues. Some factor issues. We said this earlier, but I'll say it again. It requires, to close the gap is going to require significant work outside of schools as well as what people in schools can do. The most of the solution to the achievement gap rests in economic policy, poverty, health and well-being of children, family support structures, yes? The majority of the gap will be closed when society has the courage to tackle the problems that actually close the gap, and those problems rest primarily around inequality of income, and then the damage that does to families, because income is mediated, obviously, by what happens in families. We didn't do it, we can't solve it. Here's the other thing we know. There isn't really a magic bullet here. It's going to require a combination of factors. I think the solution for the achievement gap is this. This is going to add 2%, that's 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 going to add 2%. You with me? It's going to be a concerted, systematic attack across a lot of factors, both inside the school and out. Here's the kind of package that you would actually want to put together. This is one we made up from the literature. You would want to have, clearly you'd want to have better instruction. There only, if you only have two fingers to explain why students learn, one is better instruction, the other is opportunity to learn. Right? Those are the mother load variables that explain everything that goes on in terms of students' achievement. Academic press, lower class size, we'll talk about that in a second. High personalized environments is particularly true for the clients that we're talking about here. Greater curricular rigor, which is another word for the opportunity to learn. Right? It's kind of a package. Here's the other thing that we learned from the research is that a number of people make the argument that what we actually have to have is a different kind of education for low-income and minority kids to break the gap. That doesn't seem to be true at all. I think the best thinking in the field is that what students need is a whole heck of a lot more and more intensive services, not different educational experiences. This one actually was a bit of a surprise. Given the focus in this country on sort of the academic attack, that we call academic press on kids, that literature is fairly strongly would suggest that an academic attack alone will fail. And a social attack, or cultural, or environmental attack alone will fail. But to close the achievement gap, you really need a package that emphasizes both strong academic variables and strong cultural and environmental variables in the school together. That neither alone is likely to do the trick for most kids. The other good news is there are interventions. And I don't know if this is the hand of God or what, but there are educational interventions that actually disproportionately advantage the kids that you want to advantage. You with me on this? There are interventions that help minority and low-income kids more than they help advantage kids. And the nice thing is, that's what you have to concentrate on. Obviously, this just is a graphic of it. If you just, you can't close the gap by having everybody go up by the same amount, right? You actually have to get one group to go up faster than the other group. It's pretty simple. Now, here's the story on the good part of this. These are all interventions that schools and society can engage in that disproportionately advantage low-income and African-American students. So issues like preschool, cooperative learning, smaller class size, quality instruction, all of these babies, if you can get them going on, get them in place, what you find is you actually have a potential to close the achievement gap because they increase achievement for minority and low-income kids more quickly than they do for other kids. Right? That's actually quite good news. I just gave you a couple examples. These are five or six of the major studies. Clearly show that, again, smaller class size advantages minority students, it advantages low-income students, and it advantages urban students more than it does people in other settings. That's a good finding. That's a very good finding for us. Same story with the rest of those. Now, another factor, if you read the literature, you're almost led to believe that everything counts the same. Everything doesn't count the same. Some of these variables in the improvement equation are significantly more powerful than others in this improvement equation. I already gave you the two mother load variables that explain student performance, and there are quality of instruction and opportunity to learn, which is another word for content cover. Okay, that's basically the story. So the point is, if you only have certain things you can do, you obviously want to put your chips where you're going to get the biggest payoff. Ad hoc, non-integrated, non-coordinated attacks don't seem to work very well. It's the ability to put a coherent, cohesive, integrated strategy set together that seems to be particularly helpful. This is one that if you're thinking about, say, the achievement gap in the ninth grade, and you want to deal with that, and about, it's a pretty significant achievement gap in the ninth grade. You have about, last time we saw, we had about 40% of kids nationally fail the ninth grade, which means they fail one or more classes. And a majority of that is low-income and minority kids. So if you actually want to do something about that, it's probably, again, what we said earlier, there's probably no single thing that's going to do. What you want to do is put together a package of stuff. After-school tutoring well done and service learning, ninth grade academy, support the year before the kids come in to the ninth grade, acceleration and remediation together. Just for those that don't know, there's never been a student in the last 4,000 years that was remediated out of a problem, right? So not going to happen tomorrow. So you've got to be able to move kids ahead at the same time you're helping them backfill. Co-curricular involvement, I don't know why this is, I don't have a good sense of it from the literature, but there's clearly a sense that co-curricular involvement with minority and low-income kids is a significant contribution to helping them be successful academically. And then extra service and obviously double sessions. And then issues like extended school and family life. The point here, it takes a systematic, cohesive, integrated attack on any of these achievement gap problems to get traction. Right? You need a critical mass of things, and you need to be working on them all pretty much at the same time. Issues. Are no short-term solutions. Haven't been, aren't now, and won't be tomorrow. It's a long-term issue. Early interventions trump later interventions. It's a truism. The place to solve the ninth grade problem is in preschool, not in the ninth grade. Right? Why? I'll skip over that. Well, no, I won't skip over it. We'll come back. Why is that? Because in the third grade, you have a reading problem. By the time you're in the ninth grade, you've got a reading problem, you've got a motivation problem, you've got a behavior problem, right? What started off as a problem that the organization could actually attack grows into a monster. Other thing is the literature, you need to keep an eye on this from time to time, is there's a sense that all the variables are roughly equal across time. That turns out not to be true. There are places where certain factors carry more weight. Everyone likes high teacher expectations, and no one's going to be against it at any time, but it has more power when kids are younger, whereas high personalization, these are just examples, tends to have you more powerful later on. Length of time in the treatment is important. Here's what we know. For these kids in particular, if you can get one unit of it, say fourth grade quality instruction, you're going to get how many units of benefit do you get from getting this intervention in the eighth grade? Yeah, not a trick question. Okay, so if you put eighth and ninth together, how many do you get? Right, so you didn't double, right? You got to, and if you put all three together, right? So especially for these kids on the wrong side of the gap, you want to hold the intervention across time. We talked about prevention, remediation. The other thing that's, I think, becoming clearer is you never get to the barn on this, right? Whatever you're doing, you want to continue to do even when you think you're there, right? Because kids will fall back pretty quickly. So it isn't a matter of getting kids up to close achievement gap and then stopping. You have to keep the intervention going. Cautions. Literature is pretty indiscriminate in lumping minorities together. That's understandable in some way, but probably not appropriate in others. There are clear differences between in places between different minority populations. Diverse groups within categories, the same kind of problem. There are differences between Hmong children and Chinese children within the Asian category. So you need to have a critical eye on that. And then ignoring individual differences. There's the minority status. Here's the subgroup issue. Many groups in these designations. And then we're always talking about averages. I mean, here's the point. The average black student leaves 12th grade with about an 8th grade education at best. Right? But many African American students leave with a better education, right? So the point is, you always have to remember that you're talking about averages here, right? So that to, if you want to know about a student, you have to look at that student, not the category. This is one that surfaced pretty recently. It's the unintended consequences. And these are real. These are real that come up in school. School people are pretty clever. So one of the things they do is they take their best teachers and put them in the grades that are tested. Now, there's a benefit to that, but there's a cost. And what we historically don't do, we don't look at the cost. Detracting. It's easy to say detract the school and put all the kids in the college prep and advanced classes. There are some costs to that that people usually don't take into consideration. And then issues like, I mean, one of the neat interventions out there is this sort of African-American cultural club. Actually turns out to be a fairly interesting intervention that helps kids to close the gap. But when you create clubs for certain kids and you don't create clubs for other kids, you also have unintended consequences. The point here is we tend not to look at the downside or the problems that might arise. We just look at what we think the benefit's going to be. Cost, almost no one weighs cost and benefits in these. There's a cost to reduce class size in the early grades. There's a cost to create a ninth grade academy. There's a cost, and we just don't weigh the cost versus the benefits at all. I think we would be, I would advise you to be better about that when you start to do it. Here's the final message I want to leave you with. And that is, there's a real goal here. I think that probably the fundamental conclusion when you study the achievement gap is that it's the wrong focus. That would be our argument, at least. The real issue is underachievement of kids, some of which are black, some of which are low income. But we do a disservice when we only focus. Now let me ask you the question. Of those three dimensions, which one is the concern of the achievement gap focus? Equity, clearly, right? Achievement gap is 100% focused on equity, which is a valuable and useful contribution. However, at the same time, it undersells the significance of the level of achievement and the value added. And I'll give you some examples, two examples. Here's a value, and they just make these things up just to illustrate. Right? So, here you have a case where the gap has actually increased between the second and third grade, right? You see that? It was 1.2 and it went up to 1.4. Yes? All right, if you're an achievement gap person, you're not going to be happy with this because the gap went up. I would suggest to you that would be a tragic deduction to make. Because the real issue here is that the minority kids doubled their level of productivity in 1 year more than they had in the entire time they were in school. So only to look at equity without looking at the value added, I think, can lead to some pretty strange conclusions. And here's the opposite. If you just look at value added, you will see that between the second grade and the third grade, the gap went down from 4 months to 3 months. Yes? I don't think anyone in their right mind would be happy about this picture because the level of achievement for the kids is abysmal and the value added on behalf of the school is incredibly low. So the issue here is not that equity isn't important, equity is critical, but it's only one third of the story. Right? You really want to look at equity, the level of achievement, and the value added of the achievement. We need all these things. You also need to ask yourself what you're looking at. If you look at absolute achievement or relative achievement, you can get very different answers to whether the gap is closing or not. Here's a good example. The gap clearly, in this example, between the 8th and the 12th grade went up. Yes, absolutely, about half a grade level. Are you with me? From 3 to 3.5? Right? But if you look at the relative achievement, you will come to a different conclusion, and that is that relative relative to white actually is, these are better numbers. These are things to be positive about. So that's sort of the big story. And then the final picture here is The achievement gap literature is full of belief in luck and magic and prayers and the hope that martyrs are going to come along and solve the problem. No evidence that that's ever going to happen. So the point is, it is a lot of hard work by a lot of people to make it close. Now, let me close it up for you, and then you have to go. One is, we know a lot about the gap. We know that there is a gap. There's done been a gap, as my first graders would have said. And it doesn't look like it's going away anytime soon, right, given the historical picture. That we know, right? We know a lot about what causes that gap. We know somewhere in the neighborhood of 3/4 of the gap, give or take, is caused by factors outside of school. We have to get purchase on those factors if we're going to close the achievement gap. It's not going to happen just by schools. We also know there's a lot that schools can do. The school dependency of low-income and minority kids gives us a real advantage. We have a lot of factors that we know we can implement. We can get some real traction on the gap. We know a lot of issues about timing. We know a lot of issues about some concerns we have to attend to. And then finally, I think what we have learned is that the real issue is underachievement of children. And in order to solve that, we need to look at not only equity, but equity and value added and level of achievement as well. Let me stop there. I have about 5 minutes. Yeah, five minutes. If there are questions, we can take those questions. On the other hand, I realize I am the only person standing between you and cold beer and pizza. So if you don't have questions, I would understand that. Anybody want to engage up? And yes, ma'am. Gap, the best way to close the achievement gap is to take a low-income minority kid and put him on the hip of a high-income white kid family. The schools operate by aspirations, by changing aspirations for kids. And if you can get kids to do that, so the answer is we have to get social policy that allows kids from different strata, economic strata at least, to be together. And the mix, that's critical. It's one of the 5 solutions to the gap. Now, I assume that you guys will go out and do that, right?
Yeah.
One more. Yes, sir.
I was going to say, current policy in place, the attempt to fix this, one of the things I feel is the Head Start program by the federal government. Would you say that that has just largely failed?
No, I wouldn't say. The question is the Head Start. Look, if 50% of the gap is between 0 and 5, you've got to go between 0 and 5 to close the gap. Here's the issue. It's not universal preschool. It's preschool for disadvantaged, low-income kids. You've got to put the money there, not for everybody. So, no, I would not come to that conclusion. I would say, clearly the data say it's not been as hopeful and helpful as we wanted, but I don't think we also know what it would have been if we didn't have it.
Help me thank Professor Murphy. So if we all run at the same time, there will be a massive traffic jam. So I'm going to ask a couple of things. Number one, the folks who have class at 4:10, you can leave. The other is October 8th. Bruce McCandless will be here. A terrific way to kick it off. We'll see you in about a month.